Okay, good evening, gentlemen. We continue in the Rambam Perek Vav, Halacha Tes, Chapter 6, Law 9, in the Maznaim text. It's on page 104 and 105. Okay, now, very important Halacha now. So Tes and Yud will go together. So we'll do both of them, and then we'll do some Halacha that comes out of this. So Rambam says, "Davar she'ein malacha, ve'ein osur lasos b'shabbos ela mishum shvus." Something that is not inherently a malacha, it is not a biblical transgression of the Shabbos, and it's only prohibited to do on Shabbos because it is called a shvus. What is a shvus? Shvus is a stringency with some of the activities of Shabbos and Yontif in order to produce a complete state of rest. And it basically is rabbinically decreed that you cannot do this on Shabbos. And the truth is, in Perek Chaf Aleph, the Rambam defines this idea of shvus, where the rabbis get it from the word tishbos, where you shall rest. So things that aren't even activities, you still can't do them. And many things the rabbis prohibited people from doing, because either they look like prohibited activities, and there are some that are prohibited, because if you do this, you may come to do a prohibited activity. And therefore, they didn't allow you to do this. These are rabbinically not permitted on Shabbos. So now, any one of those activities, mutar li Yisrael, loymar lenochri lasoisoi b'Shabbos. A Jew is permitted to tell a non-Jew to do these on Shabbos. However, some very important conditions are coming up now. For who provided shiye sham miktsas choli, o yiye tzorech ladover tzorech harbe, o mipnei mitzvah. Under these three conditions, and we'll learn more conditions, it will be allowed to, on Shabbos, tell a goy to do a rabbinically prohibited activity if it's to the point of there's a slight sickness. We'll have to define what that means exactly. That's already a need. Or it's something that you, is a great need for this, or for a mitzvah. In other words, generally speaking, you cannot tell a non-Jew to do an activity if it's biblically forbidden or rabbinically forbidden. But at least in the rabbinically forbidden area, we've been given three loopholes, as it were, three openings, where if it really is a need, leniencies, where there's a real need, you're allowed to do this. Now he says, miktsas choli, a little bit choli, because if he's really sick, as we've already learned, a chola she'ein bo sakana, right, a goy can do anything. Even biblical transgressions can do.
Not biblical. Only sakana.
And things that are not doraisa, then even a Jew can do. Then a Jew can do. Rabbinic. That's ain bo sakana. Yesh bo sakana is a different story. That's
Jew,
even permitted. So, but we're saying not even consider a choli sheyesh bo sakana. Even less than that. Choli ksas, a little bit sick. Already you can ask a goy, tell a goy to do a rabbinically prohibited activity. Or if there is a great need to do this. So the commentators give an example, such as merchandise that's left out in the rain. And it will spoil unless you have somebody carry it in. Let's have a big $50,000 financial loss. It'll wreck you. It'll ruin your business totally. So, and if it's only rabbinically things, let's say to carry it in a carmel, so it's only drabbanon. Take it from outside inside. If it's only drabbanon, you could ask the goy to carry it for you. Okay, there's going to be a lot of to explain, so just hold on to your horses and we'll try to get to everything as quickly as possible. And as well, for various mitzvahs that will have to be defined for us as well. What mitzvahs fit into this category? Now, the rationale for this is we have a rabbinic prohibition of speaking to a non-Jew to do a job on Shabbos. And what are you having him do? Something that's rabbinically prohibited. So we have a general rule. We don't make a gzera for a gzera. We don't make one decree upon another decree. Because the whole activity, even if the Jew did it, would only be rabbinically. And now telling a non-Jew is only rabbinically. So generally speaking, we don't apply rabbinic on a rabbinic. However, and that's the Rambam says that But even the Rambam says, but it still have to have some pressing need. So once there's a pressing need, there's a room for leniency. So this becomes a golden rule to remember. Anything iser drabonon, if you have these three needs, a choli ktsas, or there is a great pressing need, or there's some kind of a mitzvah that already and has broad definitions what a mitzvah means, we'll be referring to. Don't ask me any for instances yet, okay? Yeah?
It's not a for instance. Why?
Let's see the question.
Why is it not enough to just have a rabbinic on a rabbinic without having these three categories?
Because, you know, because there is a certain stringency about Shabbos, and the rabbis didn't want to. They wanted to have more strictnesses.
Because that
in this
works
area.
As a principle in other things.
In general, but in some areas they didn't want to be so lenient. And even with two rabbinics, still it's still Shabbos. Shabbos is a pretty important mitzvah. So there has to be some real compelling reasons to some degree to allow that to happen. To allow that to happen. So that's where they were allowing this in this situation. So now Yud is going to give some examples, and then we'll go into the Sefer over here and give much more contemporary ideas. Ketzat, so for example, what would fit into that? Om Yisrael Nachbi Shabbos Lalos V'ilin. You could tell a non-Jew to climb a tree. Oh, lashut al pnei ha'mayim, or to swim, or to travel on the water. Why? Kidei lahavi lo shofar, to bring a shofar, that's for mitzvah. Oh, sakin lamila, or the knife for a bris mila. So even though, now, of course, why can't you climb a tree? Why are you not allowed to climb a tree? Lest you'll pull a branch. It's only rabbinically prohibited to climb a tree. Let's say there's a shofar on the top of the tree, and we need it for Rosh Hashanah. Right?
It's not Shabbos.
What?
Not Shabbos.
It's Yom Tov. Oh, 1 second. It's still fine.
Yom Tov is... No,
Yom Tov. Shabbos, Yom Tov is the same thing.
Okay, so those
rules of Shabbos, Yom Tov are the same. From
you can't climb a tree on Yom Tov.
Can't climb a tree on Yom Tov either.
I appreciate that, but all of what we said about needing the tree.
How about the Torahs up in the tree?
It's Shabbos and Yom Tov. Shabbos.
Your sitter's in the tree.
Right. So it's there, right? Or you need the knife for the Bris Mila. Why can't you swim?
Because you'll dry yourself. Isn't it?
What else might you do?
Squeeze.
You might fix your little, paddle boat or whatever, something, a flotation device or something like that. So we're afraid you're swimming. You might have an object that's helping you swim, whatever. Float, a little floating thing, whatever. So rabbinically, we're worried about it. So, but now you have to do a mitzvah, then that's okay. Oh, maybe lo mechatzel lechatzer she'en eruv benem. Or you're going in a courtyard, one courtyard to the next, that doesn't have an eruv chatzeros. You can't walk in an enclosed area that many people have ownership and rights to traverse through it, unless you make an eruv chatzeros. If you don't make it, then rabbinically it's prohibited to do that either. So that you want to have the goy go through the chatzer that has no eruv. You want to bring mayim chaim lahar chitzbaim cotton. Umitzar, to have hot water to wash a child, and the child is in pain.
Bris.
Right? Especially after a bris, right? So that's a choli ktsas, right? So you should be able to do that. V'chein kol k'yeitzavhem, and therefore all situations similar to that would be permitted. So these are nice examples of mitzvahs or things like that. Okay. So let's take a look now in the safe here to give some more contemporary examples. Lots of contemporary examples. So let's get in the right order over here. So again, let's go back to the beginning again. So the prohibition again from benefiting from the malacha of a non-Jew applies if the thing he's doing is prohibited biblically or it's prohibited rabbinically, right? You cannot benefit from that, right? It's clearly. So now, even rabbinically, on a regular basis, you can't benefit from that. However, there is one classic difference between if it's prohibited biblically or rabbinically. So if, let's say, a non-Jew turns a light on for a Jew on Shabbos, so not only can the Jew that he did it for not benefit, but no Jew can benefit.
Okay,
that's very important. And if, or you have to wait until it's finished till after Shabbos and the time it takes to do it, it would apply to everybody. However, if the non-Jew does a rabbinic transgression, but without the three exceptions we mentioned, just regularly, right? So the person, if it was only rabbinically, so the person for whom the malacha was performed still may not benefit from it, but other Jews may benefit from that malacha. So it'll be a good example. So the non-Jew, it's a hot day, and the non-Jewish nanny is in your house and sees you don't have any drinks in the house. So the non-Jew goes and brings drinks from, let's say, beyond the Tum Shabbos. Or for that matter, let's say, goes to the store and buys drinks.
Cold drinks.
What's the prohibition of walking into Sobeys and, you know, giving them $5 and buying cold drinks? What's the prohibition?
Doing business.
So doing business. What's that prohibition? Is
rabbinic.
Only, it's only rabbinic. Carrying money, giving money?
Rabbinic.
Rabbinic. So really, there's only rabbinic. So the nanny just decides to go and go to the store, brings drinks. It's not bad, eh? Can't drink it.
However,
the other Jews may drink it. So let's say the nanny saw you and your family in the house, and the nanny goes out and brings the drinks. Says, I brought you drinks. Can't drink it. But some unexpected guests come.
Isn't they?
The unexpected guests, you can give them the drinks. So that's already one key difference, if it's biblically or rabbinically.
But if there's no eruv, you can't give it to them either?
If there's no eruv, now, it depends. If the carrying was biblical, well, it depends. Most places we have now are not a bona fide Rishus HaRabim. Many of them are not. To go from my house to Sobeys, I would not say Clark Avenue is Rishus HaRabim. No. Probably not.
Less than 600,000.
It's only a Carmelis.
Yeah. Maybe
the 401. Maybe.
That's as close as you're going to get.
So it's only a Carmelis. It's only rabbinically prohibited.
Okay, an easy one. If she drove to Sobeys.
Okay, that's already not so pashut. Driving the car, there's a lot of different opinions. If it's biblical, rabbinic, many would say it's biblical. But then again, she wouldn't have to have transgressed the biblical. She could have walked.
That was her choice.
So that's some other issues. But anyway, the point to be made here is that the other Jews may benefit from that. Okay? So that other thing we did. So now we have to come to the exceptions over here. So we'll go to the next section here. Again, now, even though we say that if it's rabbinic, a double rabbinic, then under these special circumstances, it's allowed, but still in all, and you really could tell them, but whenever possible, you should try to make sure it's done before Shabbos, don't rely on that. In other words, as the examples we're going to give you, if you know before Shabbos, it can be dealt with before Shabbos, you really should deal with it before Shabbos. But if you haven't, you may tell the non-Jew directly to do these things, these double rabbinics, for these four cases. So let's start with the case of Hefsid Merubah. So the Rambam calls it, what does he call it? Tzorech Ledover Tzorech Arbe. You need it very much. So what does that mean? So there's a few interpretations for this. And one of them is called Hefsid Merubah, a big financial loss. So if the Jew will have a big financial loss, you want to avert that, you can ask a Jew to transgress
a non-Jew
to transgress a rabbinic commandment. Now, obviously, the big question is, what constitutes a substantial financial loss? And that will depend on many factors, such as the individual's personal financial status, current economic conditions, among others. Therefore, that's the kind of thing you have to ask a rabbi. It's not so pashut for you to decide on that. And as well, the potential loss, you know, doesn't have to certainly occur either. It could be, like, highly likely, right? So you can ask the non-Jew to do a malacha, even if it's only a possibility of a major loss. Now, if the loss is not going to be substantial, then you can't tell the non-Jew to do it. But again, here we come to an example where even if it's not substantial, you can still hint to the goy to do the necessary malacha. Here's where the hint would help. So let's give a few examples. So let's say you have a well-stocked freezer with meat. You just bought a side of a cow.
Power
How much meat would that be?
Rabbi, that's about 400.
Worth?
Oh, side is about 200 pounds, so about, let's say, about $1,000.
Okay, it's $1,000 of meat, right? And one of your kids was playing, and he tripped over the cord and pulled out the cord.
Oh, no, that's not
Friday
good.
Night.
That's not good.
So by Matzah Shabbos, you may have $1,000 of spoiled meat.
Oh, boy. Yep.
Right. So I'm saying, but that's a very large quantity, and that would be considered a financial loss. Now, and putting the plug in is only a rabbinic prohibition. So therefore, you could tell the non-Jew to plug the freezer in.
Yeah.
That would be a classic example of a large financial loss.
It sounds like the majority of things that we do on Shabbos or don't do are really rabbinic.
A lot of them are rabbinic. We have to know. I have another book we'll maybe look at one time that has all the modern applications for that.
Using the time?
Well, let's just take one thing at a time. Let's take one thing at a time.
Should you err on the side of hinting first, and if he doesn't get it, then you tell him?
You don't have to. You don't have to hint.
That's a big loss.
You don't have to. You don't have to. You don't have to. Now, let's say there's only a few pieces of meat in the freezer. Let's say it's a few steaks. So now it's a $50 loss, $100 loss, right? So it's not substantial. He really shouldn't tell the non-Jew to reconnect it, but he could say the following. He could say, you know, if the plug remains disconnected, the food will spoil.
My rib steaks.
Okay, what's going to happen to my rib steaks? If it doesn't get reconnected, the food will spoil, and I can't connect it because it's Shabbos. Now, if the boy's been living with you for a while, he understands what that means.
How would you like an ice cold beer? Right. Put it in the freezer.
How about if, let's say, your air conditioner, you have sometimes in the summer, it freezes up.
Oh.
Right? And if you don't, and that's gonna, and it's, you can run the whole Shabbos that way. So if you don't do something about it, it could break the whole air conditioning system, be a major repair. You can ask the non-Jew to turn off the air conditioning system. Right? If, let's say, a child turned on an appliance on Shabbos, and if you leave it running the entire Shabbos, it will overheat, it can get wrecked up, you'd be allowed to tell the non-Jew to turn off the appliance. These are some examples. So in other words, financial loss, big financial loss, only rabbinic problem, can tell the non-Jew directly. Small financial loss, hint to them. Okay? Now I don't want to get into all of them now. You have to know what's a biblical, what's a rabbinic, all those things. A lot of these, it depends on a lot of the nature of the type of electrical appliance, et cetera, et cetera. What is exactly, so I don't want to really get into all those examples. We'll spend another session on that to get through those, okay? So that's that. So that's the first example, Hefsed Merubah. Now, the other case is B'mako Mitzvah, if it's to do a mitzvah. So let's say, for example, if a sitter or machzer is not available in shul, and you need one, you wouldn't be able to daven properly without it. And let's say there's an issue of carrying through a karmelis, so you can tell the non-Jew to carry the sitter to shul. Because our streets are considered only a karmelis, so it's only rabbinic, the non-Jew can carry it. Now, okay, so the truth of the matter is, because the whole thing, there's a lot of opinions who hold that a street which serves a population less than 600,000, is considered a karmelis, not a servant. Okay, good. And let's say, listen to this, what if the guy, non-Jew, would have to traverse a major thoroughfare, which is Rosh Hashanah? Mm-hmm. So it's still considered a shvus to shvus, a rabbinic. Why? Because the non-Jew could carry the sefer without stopping. Remember, you only transgress when you stop, biblically.
Right.
So he could not without stopping, according to many authorities, which would only be a shvus. And if he chooses not to, you only transgress when you stop, when I carry from the house and stop.
Yeah.
If I keep going and I don't stop,
I can throw it from.
It's only rabbinically prohibited.
So if the air is down and you're pushing a shredder from your house,
but you can't do it because it's rabbinically prohibited. But the non-Jew could.
Right.
So
when it's necessary, as long as it doesn't stop.
Ah,
okay. The non-Jew doesn't. But that's only but nowadays it's more likely to be a karmelis anyway. I'm just giving an example of how far this goes. Okay. Now, how about hachnasas orchem, having guests? How about oinig Shabbos? Enjoying the Shabbos are also mitzvahs, and there's significant reasons to allow a non-Jew to do rabbinic transgressions for you. So if, let's say, the comfort of your guest is dependent on this, let's say your guest will need extra blankets, extra pillows, etc., you can ask the non-Jew to bring him from a neighbor's house, even if there's no Eruv, that would only be rabbinic as well. Okay?
How would we need a light on in the cupboard?
And maybe...
We're off.
That's already, you know.
We'll talk about the lights.
Well, not the same. Electricity lights. We'll talk about it. I don't want to talk about it now. We'll do it later. Mm-hmm. Okay. But again, they could go to the store and buy pillows and blankets.
Sure.
If you need that. Right? And then the next one we said was pain. Sargodal. If you have a lot of pain, you can ask a non-Jew to do a rabbinic activity. So let's say you have a painful burn. Let's say a pot fell on you and you got a big burn. So you can have the non-Jew go to the drugstore and buy some ointment.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say it's a holy even she ain't but sakana, but it's painful.
Yeah.
Right? You have an infection, whatever. Any of these things where let's say you need to go buy medicine in the store. Mm-hmm. But doctor says you need the medicine. You shouldn't wait till after Shabbos, whatever. So now you can go and get the prescription filled and whatever and get that done. Now another factor that Rambam doesn't specifically mention, but there's another factor. It's called kavod habrius, human dignity. And you may have to ask a non-Jew to do something in order to not take away your human dignity. So let's say, for example, you fall down and tear your clothes, and you're embarrassed to go home in torn up clothes. Right? So you could tell a non-Jew to bring a change of clothes, even though it means he has to walk through the Carmelites and transgress a rabbinic halacha. Or maybe a little more common example, let's say you're making a Shalom Zohar or a Kiddush, and you forgot to buy the cold drinks. Right? And if this would be embarrassing, imagine you go to a guy's Shalom Zohar in the middle of July. It's a really hot day. People coming in, and you ain't got no drinks for them.
No cold drinks either.
You know, they're gonna say like, "What kind of host are you? You know, what's the matter?"
I'm
with
not
you?
Coming back to this place.
You know, and it could be a great source of embarrassment. So you could have the non-Jew purchase the drinks. So you're beginning to see that there's a lot of
opportunities for Filipino nannies.
Yes,
get some good nannies.
You know, it's always good to have a neighbor who's got a nanny, right? So. One more category, Shabbos meals. Shabbos meals, the three Shabbos meals are all included in Oneg Shabbos, delighting in the Shabbos, and delighting in the Shabbos is a mitzvah. So again, you may ask a non-Jew to transgress a rabbinic law in order to enable you to have these three meals. Now it's interesting, we have to determine what is part of Oneg Shabbos, and what is beyond the needs of Oneg Shabbos. So they go through this. So Friday night meal, for example, what must you have? You have to have wine.
Yes.
You have to have Lecha Mishnah, fish, and meat.
Candles for the meal.
Candles you have to have beforehand already.
Yes, before Shabbos.
I didn't say candles. He said candles.
No,
right? So wine, challah, fish, and meat, or any substitute thereof, but that's the main course. Right? Yeah. Very important to have fish. Miss that fish on Shabbos. Sure. Big thing to have fish. So, and the same thing goes for the Shabbos day meal. Those four. Shalashuris, only Lecha Mishnah and fish. But these are the five that are not considered essential. I know many of us may think differently, but non-essentials are kugels, salads, drinks,
that's another lecture.
And desserts.
That's another lecture.
Non-essential. Non-essential.
It even says beer.
Yeah, including soda and beer. Sorry, it's not an essential. So now, what are you allowed to do? So whatever is missing, you can ask a non-Jew to bring any of those basic items that are missing to go to a neighbor's house, even though there's no air, or technically you can go to the store and buy them.
Yeah.
Technically, like, you know, you go to Sobeys, go to the kosher thing, have the nanny go in and buy the meat.
Grape juice.
And buy the fish. There's no reason why they couldn't do that.
You can't give them the money if they have to.
Oh, yeah, they have to know where the money is.
You could tell them where the money is.
Go into my purse and take the money.
Here's the money.
Take the credit card.
Yeah, go.
Well, that's a problem. Credit card would be a problem. Why?
Because you got to sign.
You'd have to sign.
That's a sign. Now, that's a biblical. That's a biblical.
That would be biblical.
Cash is better. Just give them cash. Give them cash.
Debit. Debit.
A debit card? I don't know.
You got to use a transaction.
I don't know. Okay. Cash. Cash is always best. Cash is king, right?
Cash is king.
So that's regarding carrying and bringing. Now, look, this is very interesting. Now we're going to build on other halachas now. So how about cooking? Can you tell? Let's say you didn't cook, but you got a chicken in the fridge. Raw chicken in the fridge.
No.
So that would be a problem. That would be bishul. Bishul is cooking. Ah, but let's think for a minute now. How about to reheat food?
Oh.
Okay. right? Let's be real specific here. Reheat dry food.
Yes.
In other words, so you want to put it right into the oven.
Yes.
The oven is on. Right? The oven is on. But you forgot to put the food in the oven. And it's raw.
Frozen,
or cold.
Yeah, right? Cold, that's better.
Really cold, right?
Yeah, cool.
It's previously cooked, right? But you can't enjoy it because it's cold, right? So you're going to ask the Jew to put it, to put it into a pre-existing flame, even though rabbinically you're not allowed to because it looks like you're, all those cases that we said you couldn't put it on because it looks like you're cooking. Or the problems of, chazorah, that you could have a non-Jew do.
But is this all the chora? It's not part of the regular duties. This is only if it happened. It's not part of the regular duties that you can expect.
You don't start the Shabbos saying, we don't have to put the food in the oven. Yeah. Yeah. I'll ask, to put it in, whatever, No, that you don't do.
Yeah, you can't do that.
Whatever you're able to, you're supposed to do, but, you forgot. It's those good old-fashioned forgets.
Yes.
Right? So you got the forgets, right? But you can't ask them, to reheat non-essential dry foods.
Like kugels.
Just the fish and the chicken.
Right.
That's it, right? Now, it gets more, I don't want to get it more complicated. Now, obviously, with liquids, there's going to be other problems, because we said liquids, there's big problems of reheating and this, that gets very complicated.
It's official after bishul.
We'll just leave that.
With liquids.
Now, one, yes, sir?
Which mitzvah are we going on?
Oneg Shabbos. Oneg Shabbos.
Okay. Pleasure.
So it doesn't matter. Because before we were saying for the get.
There's Hachnosas Orchim.
This
is for yourself, for your meal. You want to enjoy the meal. Why can't you do it? Now, how about, what about Bein Hashmashos? What about a twilight? So at twilight, you're permitted to tell a non-Jew to do any malacha.
It's double sefik.
Doraisa or Derabbanan.
Right.
Why? Because Bein Hashmashos is only Aser Derabbanan.
To begin with.
And telling them to do it is only Derabbanan. So now they can provide a Shabbos need even if it's not an essential item.
So Saturday evening also.
Right, yeah. So you're allowed to ask a non-Jew to cook Bein Hashmashos
any
period for the Shabbos meal, provided, of course, there wouldn't be problems with Bishul Akum.
No.
That's another problem.
Right.
If there's no problem with Bishul Akum, you could ask for that Bein Hashmashos. So that's
Does it have to be Ben Drosai by the time Shabbos starts?
No, because the Goy is doing it. You have nothing to do with
He's cooking on Shabbos. You see, if it's not Ben Drosai.
It's Bein Hashmashos.
I know, but if I said by three stars, does it have to be Ben Drosai?
It's a 4-hour roast. They're just starting it
time. They put it in before. I'm Bein Hashmashos. What do you care?
It's going to cook 95%.
Ben
when there's no Ben Hashmashos.
It's already two Derabbanans.
Okay.
You got two Derabbanans. What do you care about? But it's different. This is twilight. It's a different kind of Derabbanan over there. So that's why, for example, if you forgot to light the candles, you can
light
the candles for you. She can light the candles for you.
100%.
Because it's
she can't say the bracha for
two Derabbanans, and then you can make the bracha.
That's right.
So that's a way out of that. Okay? So that's a little taste of all these interesting halachas. That's very helpful. It's very helpful. Now, let's do one more. Can I do one more? I like this one. It's a short one, and we've only gone 28 minutes. I don't know. I can't remember. It's so small. It's not up to 30. Let's do one more. It's very short, and it's good because it's one topic, and the next thing's going to be a new topic. Very quick, Yudal. And we have to talk about, in honor of Brian, we're going to do this halacha. Halokeach bayis be'eretz Yisrael min anochri. If a person buys a house in Eretz Yisrael from a non-Jew, okay? Mutalo lomar lenochri lichtav lo shtar b'Shabbos. You can tell the non-Jew to write the deed of sale on Shabbos to buy it for you. And it's based on a Gemara in Baba Kama that says if a person buys a house in Eretz Yisrael, you write the document, even on Shabbos. Gemara says, what? You can do it on Shabbos? You think you can write on Shabbos? It says, no, you can tell the non-Jew to do it. And why? Because the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael, we permit rabbinic things are waived. And that's why the Rishalmi says, Rabbi Shua ben Levi asked Rabbi Shimon Lakish, what's the halacha of buying houses from a non-Jew. So he says, what are you talking about? I said, I'm talking about on Shabbos. Can you buy from them on Shabbos? He says, on Shabbos, you're permitted to do it. They ask, how are you able to do it? Since, you know, how's the Jew can't give him the money? He says, you show him where the money is.
Show me money.
And then the non-Jew signs and seals and everything. Aye, this is a biblical transgression. Doesn't matter. We see Shabbos even transcends the non-Jew. Remember, it's only rabbinic for me to have him do a non-biblical thing. And what's the biggest proof? Because we know Jericho was conquered on
Shabbos.
Shabbos. Even on Shabbos, you can do that. So you can tell him to write the star on Shabbos. Why? Shamir, that's back in the Rabbah. Shamir, Lenachri, Shabbos, that's already prohibited. Telling a non-Jew to do something on Shabbos is only rabbinically prohibited. And we shum Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, and for the midst of settling Eretz Yisrael, Lo Gazru, Bedover Zed, they did not, remember, it's a decree. The rabbi said, we're not going to make a decree over there. Right? Even though we said for a mitzvah, will we allow this? Will we allow for a mitzvah the koi to transgress a biblical prohibition? We won't allow this. Right? But the mitzvah of Eretz Yisrael, which is said is greater than all other mitzvahs, as the Sifri says, it says you will conquer the land, and then it says you should do and listen to all the mitzvahs I command you. So we see conquering the land is juxtaposed to doing all the mitzvahs, so living in Eretz Yisrael is equal to all the mitzvahs. Of course, with under certain provisions. But globally speaking, that's the case. And therefore, v'chein alokeach bais mehem b'Syria, for that matter, if you're going to buy a house from a non-Jew in Syria, it's also allowed to do that. Why? Because Syria was the land that King David captured, and technically it had certain aspects of Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. The problem was he conquered it before he conquered the rest of Eretz Yisrael, which was a technical problem. Yeah. And therefore, we say that Syria has certain aspects of Kedushas Eretz Yisrael and certain not. And regarding buying property, it does. Shesuria kit Eretz Yisrael, the Rezea, Syria is considered like Eretz Yisrael for this thing. So if you're in great dangers over here of losing the deal, if you don't sign the seal the deal on Shabbos, an apartment in Damascus,
wouldn't advise.
You could have the non-Jew do it for you, and you could have your house in Eretz Yisrael.